And you know, it's just by coincidence. We give out the good news just as somebody that has been in a bubble. He's been locked down on Capitol Hill. He has had to empty his own trash, check his own security, because all the other employees on Capitol Hill, there was nowhere to be found. Had to probably fix his own lunch. Our congressman, Andre Carson, the shutdown is over and everybody done come home to their respective districts. He's here. How you doing?
Dr. Brown just touched down 15 minutes ago, exhausted, bent but not broken, fired up, ready to go. I'm happy that we resolved this issue. I'm really happy for our staffers in D.C. and in Indianapolis who continue to go to work. I was just talking to a TSA agent who was talking about he and his wife were talking about pulling their kids out of school.
Ooh.
The kind of uncertainty that we're wrestling with, the kind of division, the kind of political posturing. You know, it is my hope that the American people become outraged because we cannot continue to govern crisis by crisis. The government was shut down for 16 days after the House Republicans attempted to stop health care access for all Americans, Dr. Brown. Mm. We should be focusing really on jobs instead of jeopardizing the paychecks of nearly a million Americans. And so even though Congress has gotten some attention over the past few weeks, we've not actually accomplished much because raising the debt ceiling and funding the government should have been quick and not even worthy of news. So we have to get back to the real issues. We got to pass our annual spending bills. We have to pass a farm bill to keep food prices down and hunger programs operational. We have to pass a defense authorization. I sit on the Armed Services Committee. We want to make sure that policies supporting our troops are up to date, and we have to have an honest discussion about immigration.
One of the things you mentioned, the TSA agent. What about the dedication of all these federal workers? I mean, TSA agents, their job, they're the first line of defense of some mess in our airports, and those folks had to work without knowing, do I have to dip in my savings?
That's
do
right.
I have to borrow out of my kids' college fund piggy bank?
Absolutely.
Do I have to tell my kids, you ain't getting no allowance because I got to be able to put gas in my car to get to the job?
You know, it's sad. I spoke to some TSA agents on the way back from Reagan National, and one told me that he's not even going to vote. I said, my dearest brother, you're a federal worker. You need to vote to prevent things like this from happening in the future. The TSA agents in Indianapolis have been phenomenal, still coming to work with a sense of pride, just like our staffers on the congressional side, coming to work with a sense of pride, a sense of patriotism, but still anxious, still not knowing what to do, still worried about their pensions. And for those folks who love to talk about and theorize about a smaller government, sure, we need to make more government efficient. That's at the federal level, state level, and local level. Sure, we need to have certain reforms as it relates to fraud and abuse and waste and even possibly selling off some of our unused federal assets. But this foolishness about making a smaller government, cutting entitlements, those Republicans, particularly with the Tea Party, need to stop the foolishness because you know what? Listen, there are some members of the delegation. I don't know why they voted against a continuing resolution. I'm sure that you could ask them those questions. But those folks who represent rural parts of this state where they have tremendous needs, Dr. Brown, they need to be called to account and need to be held accountable come 2014 in our election.
You may have questions for your congressman. He's back home, 239-1310, 239-1310, Congressman Andre Carson. Were you surprised at how many Republicans withstood the crazies of their own party and voted yesterday yes? I mean, I thought it was going to be like 30 or 40 Republicans, and the number kept going higher as I was watching the C-SPAN screen, and I'm going, that's a gutsy vote for some of those. And we were talking earlier before you came in, they're already dogging out Susan Brooks for voting yes.
I just saw her in the airport, and before I could even give her a hug, she ran up to me and gave me a hug. She said, well, I don't put her on blast. She said, I know I'm going to have a primary and challenger. I said, listen, your constituents are smart enough to know not to support anybody who supports the Tea Party dogma. Amos, I have to have security right now in the district because of numerous death threats because of some comments that I made a few years ago about the Tea Party. Mm-hmm. Folks condemned me, as you know. My language was strong. But I knew what I was working with. I was going to work every day with these folks. Mm-hmm. And I saw the vitriol. I saw the animosity. I saw the veneer of hatred running amok. I saw the posturing of patriotism. I heard the God talk. I heard biblical talk. But what I felt was a deep sense of intolerance and wanting to take our country back to a mythological good old days where African Americans were second-class citizens, had to ride the back of the bus. Women of all colors and persuasions were treated like second-class citizens. Those aren't the good old days. That's a dark time in America's history. We have to move forward.
We'll take a break, go to your phone calls. I will allow the congressman to take a breath because
I'm tired.
He's tired. Well, now, you're not. Yeah, but see, he was on the airplane. It was not like the Grambling football team riding 16 hours here up, 12 to 16 hours back. But he's back home because he needed some home cooking. Because I know were y'all eating out in the microwave or what?
Listen, my birthday was yesterday. We thought we were going to be out. The staff was kind enough, but I got to see my family.
239-1310. We'll be back after these.
Somebody had called, Congressman, before you got in here, had some concerns about some things that I think were in the old farm bill or the partial farm bill that negatively impacted HBCUs. And some other stuff, is part of the issue of the farm bill is the Republican majority cut assistance to those who really need it and gave a lot of assistance to big corporate farms.
Absolutely. You know, I'm appreciative that, Speaker Pelosi has appointed, the Congressional Black Caucus chair and leader, Marsha Fudge, on to the, as one of the conferees, dealing with this issue, so we know we're going to have HBC issues at the forefront. One of the concerns.
How did HBCU issues end up in a farm bill?
Well, because back in the day, there was a connection. I think
that's the land grant stuff.
Okay, all right. And so they were tied to in the enactment under President it misses me right now.
Johnson? Was that under Johnson or
was it Johnson or
Nixon?
No, or I want to say no. HBCUs. That was I want to say it was before that because University missed a cutoff in 69. I think it was Eisenhower.
Because under under segregation, the HBCUs in the South that were state run were branches of the land.
It was like grants.
Separate but equal, so we'll have separate land grant college for you black folks.
That's right.
And the farm bill deals and land grant colleges teach agriculture.
That's right. And the fund, that's where you get the North Carolina so-and-so. That's right. So, but the truth of the matter is that anything can really be stuck into a big bill. Anything can be stuck into a bill. And that's the larger issue. So we're going to have Marsha Fudge as one of the conferees. But, you know, we've been really pushing back on some of our HBCU presidents to have more participation from them. We just sent a letter to Arne Duncan, who I'm in agreement with on many issues. But on this issue, I don't think that he's been vocal enough in terms of speaking on behalf of HBCUs as it relates to the farm bill and what needs to be done.
Let me go to Alan at 239-1310. Hi there.
Good afternoon, Mr. Brown. Thank you for taking my call. Mm-hmm. Congressman Carson, this is indeed an honor.
The honor's mine, sir. Thank you.
But I have an agenda, sir. I am a Vietnam veteran and was to be at my memorial Tuesday of this week and chose not to go before because it was closed. That greatly disturbs me, and I would hope, Congressman Carson, before the government shuts down again, that someone put forth legislation that says never again will a veteran be denied the right to approach their memorial. Thank you for taking my call, and I'll listen to your response.
Alan, thank you for your service as well. Is that something that the American people forget what government does do? And right. Monuments are not just the Washington Monument, it's not just the Statue of Liberty, but it is those special memorials as well as our military cemeteries that honor those who served and those who fell.
You're absolutely right. I think one of the fallouts from this shutdown, beyond the Tea Party rhetoric, beyond the far right talking about defunding Obamacare, was that it had real implications. One, for federal workers. Two, for those tourists, the tourism industry, those folk, those vets who needed to be acknowledged for their service in our armed services. They couldn't even go to their monuments and memorials to reflect, to have some kind of introspection and to be acknowledged for their service because they were shut down.
Is part of it also because we're in this age of terrorism? That the, because I think some people out in the real world would have thought, well, what do you, if what do you need to have barricades by a monument? That's no different than if you go down to Monument Circle, we've got a monument that, as well, or the War Memorial, there's not barriers to keep you there because it's part of a park, and then maybe, but I think the barriers are there and the guards are there to keep somebody from acting a fool.
You have rampant acts of potential vandalism. You have extremist operations who want to make statements by targeting some of our monuments to get attention. And so whenever there's a shutdown or potential shutdown, fears and anxieties are exacerbated and rampant. And as a result, you have people seeking to make political statements, just like the stenographer made a political statement, though I think she's a nice person. You have other people who are seeking to make political statements. We saw Senator Ted Cruz and Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann making a political statement with veterans during a time of great economic uncertainty, and it's unfortunate that you have members of Congress who are so obsessed with raising their national profiles that they're less inclined to help the very people that they're sent to represent.
Let me go to Daryl at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hey, good evening. Afternoon, rather. Wanted to know, and I don't know if this question had been posed or not, as far as when the government had shut down, did that affect those that are in college as far as student aid or anything like that? I was just kind of curious about that. Because I know certain colleges have gotten their disbursements, and then there were certain colleges that was before the shutdown, and I've noticed that certain colleges now have not received them since the shutdown. So I was just kind of curious about that. Thank you.
Well, I think it is a great question. Those disbursements will continue. There have been some delays in many cases. We have to remember that this shutdown, this, I think, 16-day shutdown, cost our country about $24 to $25 billion.
Wait, it cost us $24-$25 billion.
Absolutely.
Just to be shut down.
Just to be shut down, and colleges were a part of that process. So we're going to see a staggering effect as it relates to disbursements to certain colleges and universities.
Can we send Todd Rokita the bill for that? You can tell him I said that, because and if he gets out of line, I can remember when he said master and slave way back in the day. I found the tape. I may bring it back before next year's anniversary. 239-1310. This afternoon's with Amos. Let me go back to the phones. And Barbara. Hi there. Barbara?
Yeah, I was just curious to find out, how did the Tea Party have so much authority? And then also, too, as citizens of the United States of America, can we do some kind of protesting? I'm not talking about violent. I'm talking about nonviolent protesting to let these people know that they are supposed to be serving us and not the other way around.
I think you're absolutely right. And I think we need to have more protests leading up to major votes. I like the one that was taken last night. You know, the Tea Party came into power in 2010 when you had this anti-incumbent sentiment, which happens every few years, and folks are obsessed with voting out the bums. Well, as I said a few weeks ago, we voted out the so-called bums and brought in lunatics and people who are intolerant and intolerable. And my hope is that the Republican Party will not concede and allow the tail to wag the dog, because you have a caucus of, I think, 80 Tea Party, self-identified Tea Partiers who are pushing back against the moderate strain of the Republican Party, and they're calling the shots, and it's hurting their brand. What they attempted to do with defunding Obamacare and halting funding the government was a fool's errand at best. It was the suicide mission, as someone just said earlier. And I think that the American people are fed up. My hope is that that kind of righteous indignation will continue until next year's election.
With Congressman Andre Carson, Given that, I appreciate it. On the other side of the coin, and we were talking about this before you got here. We know the focus of the media is now going to turn because this miniseries is over. This episode of Scandal has ended. So now the new episode of Scandal. Why can't the website work? Now, you know, by the time y'all come back to Congress, the other side is going to be harping on the legitimate problems with the healthcare.gov website. First of all, from the Democratic perspective, are you all hearing about that from Democratic members, and what kind of pressure are you all going to put on the White House? Because we were jokingly said that either the president needs to call that software company and read them the Riot Act, or the first lady ought to be the one to call. Let a sister take care of it.
I had a colleague tell me that she experienced just experimentally issues with accessing healthcare.gov, and she had to go on the Maryland Exchange's website to then ultimately get to healthcare.gov because of the volume of interest that the administration received that day. But I think they're working out the kinks right now. Secretary Sebelius with Health and Human Services have been at the forefront of this, and we're talking to those experts to help us handle the volume of request and interest that this thing has generated. And what folks are seeing, Amos, is that, you know, I heard a few weeks ago that a guy, actually a Republican, who was against Obama and vehemently opposed to Obama, went on the Exchange and realized that the health care that he received was $300 less with a competing company because of the Exchange. And that almost made him a convert.
But it's almost like we still haven't been able to figure out what the price is of the health care, because I think I registered and forgot what my code word was and I haven't even tried to get back through. My Friday friend, we actually sat here. Congressman, took me 45 minutes two Fridays ago. I was able to get in. My Friday friend took him an hour and a half to get in. And he is a self-employed person, so he's somebody that could benefit. He still hasn't been able to get through, and I personally think they know who he is, and they're trying to keep him out. But it was almost like before you got to answer all of these other questions, it would seem to me, tell us what the prices are, and if the prices are that good, then you're going to be willing to want to answer the questions.
Well, there are states across the country who accept Medicare, whose sites actually work. We're talking about California, Kentucky,
I heard
of all
Kentucky,
places.
Republican state. Now, you know that's bad when stuff in Kentucky works. That's bad.
North Dakota and of course, D.C.
239-1310. Let me go to Jerome right quick. Hi, Jerome.
Hello, Amos and Congressman Carson.
Hi. Hello.
Amos, my first quick point on the IPS thing. I graduated in 74, and I was on the tail end of the baby boom. So the 18-year-olds was, you know, we had the most 18-year-olds every year, all the way up until, what, 78, something like that. So I just question the legitimacy of those figures, because when I was at Manual, our Manual increased all 4 years I was there.
Wow.
So as far as the attendance goes. But as an independent, with all this, with everything that happened for the last couple of weeks, I'm just frustrated from a citizen. I voted for Congressman Carson, and I voted for Donnelly. I'm glad for the vote. I don't have a problem with the vote. I have a problem with both sides. I got a serious problem with Harry Reid as a leader. I can't stand leadership that the first thing out of your mouth is the degrading of someone else. I just don't see how you can go across the aisle then or to that person and then say, you know, you're a scumbag and let's work together though. I don't like that portion of it, and that just always frustrates me. I knew that this was going to get resolved at the last minute because everybody had too much to lose. And as far as people going, you know, the pain that people felt in these 2 weeks, to me, I know some government employees. Basically, they got a 2-week paid vacation. I know it's not that simple, but when the private sector, same thing happens like that. I've been in two different companies in my lifetime that shutdowns happened. We didn't get any back pay. We had to sit for 2 weeks. Now, we seriously ate the money. And this is where people who are independent-minded like me, which I have a lot of people that I know that are independent like me, and this is where we get frustrated, because the deck isn't stacked the same way for the citizens and the people that are in the government. This is where we get frustrated with the government side of things. And this is, I know you have an open mind on all this, and I know that you can reach across the aisle, and I know that you're a man that has integrity. And all I'm asking is everybody tone down this rhetoric, and let's do get to work. Let's put that shoulder to the grindstone.
Great comment.
Congressman, is what Jerome said, is that what your office was hearing both in Washington and here in Indianapolis?
Jessica, who's answers the phone, and we've heard from Megan, our district director, and Andrea, and others, we got a plethora of calls. What kinds of calls were we getting?
Yeah, I mean, we were receiving frustrated callers, you know, saying basically the same thing. We don't understand. It needs to be resolved. But we also were getting callers saying thank you for standing up to the Republican Party and fighting for the constituents of the 7th Congressional District. So we heard it from both sides.
But I think what Congressman with the caller, you know, said is, you're right, you cannot, and this is almost scriptural, you know, Jesus would say, you know, let us sit down, come let us reason together, I think is the part with scripture. Yes. And, you know, in all of his teachings, he would never talk down or talk negatively to people, even if he knew it was the Pharisees or the Romans, or the people that were trying, that he knew, since he knew everything, he knew was going to give them harm. It was always lead with a positive. Let me go to Anonymous at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hi, Anna. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
My comment is to the caller who said, is there a nonviolent way that that we can do to protest this? The nonviolent way is to get up and get out and vote. When voting time comes around, if it's raining, go. If it's cold, go. Because that voice is the voice that gives us the power to say, listen, we are sick and tired of your foolishness. Yes, we remember when you shut down the government for 16 whole days.
That's right.
And it cost us $6 million or whatever the astronomical figure is.
That's right.
And go and vote those people out. Say, that's enough. We've had enough. We're sick and tired.
Come on now.
Get up out of this seat and go home.
You better preach it.
All right. Appreciate it. 239-1310. Tell me to go to Dave at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hey, good afternoon, Amos.
Good afternoon.
And, Mr. Congressman, Andre Carson.
Hello, Dave.
It's always a pleasure to hear your voice.
Pleasure's mine, my brother.
Me and your grandmother go a long ways back, and, always.
You.
God bless Julian.
I miss her.
You know, over the, past few months and all that, I sit up and I hear politicians speak, you know, on the left and on the right. And at the same given time, you know, at the end of the day, everybody casted their vote. Now everybody's going on vacation. I'm like Jerome, you know. When will the politicians separate themselves from a fantasy world and get off into a reality world of real Americans? Because nowhere in America can we close our business, then reopen our business, then go on a vacation.
Well, wait a minute. Let me ask you a question. Do you think the reason he's here is he's on vacation?
No. Amos.
Okay.
When I'm speaking, I'm speaking as a total voice, as an individual, but as a total voice of America about what me being an individual and every other individual see that is occurring in this country.
And you ask, when will this stop? It will stop. It will stop when we go to the polls, as the previous caller mentioned, and vote those folks out of office who continue to misrepresent your and my interests, and vote people in office and keep people in office who are doing the right things.
Yes, and you know what? And you are so right about that. You are so right about that. But Andre, as an individual, now, you know, you tell us, how do we combat big interest groups? Because, you know, for a long time. You know, we'll talk loud, but we'll do nothing. You know,
let me phrase it another way. Isn't it also, how many times have people over the years gotten in their cars or rented a bus and gone to Washington to be in the march on fill in the blank and have a great time on a Thursday or a Friday or a Saturday and come back on a Sunday instead of maybe taking one day off work, driving or renting a bus and coming to see their member of Congress or their congressional delegation?
Exactly. Good point. And that's why we need more homebred ground roots.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, coming
that's a
up.
Great question.
And that's what I'm saying, Amos.
No,
Mr. Carson.
No, I understand.
That's a good point.
Amos makes a phenomenal point. I got a copy of I saw a copy of the Republican playbook. And their talking points and their messaging for the next few weeks. And one of the things that was listed was they wanted to hammer on lobbying. Well, what you're talking about, Amos, is in fact lobbying. Getting folks from the grassroots, getting interest groups together, be they educators, be they immigration reformists, be they engineers, be they Indigo bus drivers, whomever, to lobby members of Congress or their state legislators to come up with ways that we can provide legislative remedies to some of these issues.
And I know when the veteran called earlier, when Alan called, who was a Vietnam veteran and had his concerns, and I know when I was out in Washington and had the privilege of being at the Congressional Black Caucus weekend and was privileged to visit your office, I'm standing in line, a big bus shows up, and a bunch of veterans got out, and they looked like, from their age, World War II and Korea veterans, and they were going in the building, so I hung back. I said, you guys can be in line. You guys go through security first. And then they got through security, and then I noticed that they were huddled around, and somebody had their member pin, their member of Congress.
That's right.
And I knew they were going there to talk about issues of concern of veterans, and I knew that that member of Congress, as all member of Congress, when they are talking to veterans, they're going to stand up and salute and listen very seriously. And I think that's just as we tell people to go down and lobby when the legislature is in session here in Indianapolis. Maybe it's investing. If the Grambling kids don't want to ride the bus for 12, 16 hours, tell them to send the bus here, and a whole lot of folks from Indianapolis will make the 12-hour trip out there. Let me go to Thelma and Sharon, because we got to get the congressman back to his family. He ain't seen his family. Ain't seen his child because they held him hostage. Let me go to Thelma. Hi, Thelma.
Hi. I'm calling. I'm new to Indianapolis. I transferred from California, and I work for the Veterans Administration, and I'm calling because of the previous caller, the independent guy. Like I said, I work for the Veterans Administration, and not all of us were at home lounging and getting paid. Some of us were working. And the thing that I guess that bugs me, I had two veterans that passed in my caseload. They're widows. They're trying to get things done. You know, they can't call the Veterans Administration because a lot of the people weren't there. They can't call the Social Security office because they weren't there. They can't really deal with the IRS or whatever because they weren't there. So when you talk about the impact, yes, the monument was impacted, but you have a lot of just people without lobbyists, just people that this particular shutdown has impacted.
Yes, again. That's a great point. That's a great point, Thelma. Appreciate it. Let me go to Sharon right quick. Hi, Sharon. Sharon?
Yes.
You're on the air.
Yes, hi. I was calling about the two-time Vietnam veteran that just recently passed, June the 27th, and he was left the largest sum of retro pay on the Indianapolis office has ever seen, that they informed me, which was close to $1 million. For 10 months, they refused to give him his award amount. And upon his death, they informed me that nobody will receive his retro money. And I'm asking Congressman Carson about that law.
if you would call Donna Surrett.
Yes, I am talking to Donna.
What did she tell
you? And Donna has informed me that he's dead. Nobody received $1 million.
When was the last?
I have talked to the National Veterans Legal Service, which Donna referred me to, and they stated that the family is entitled to the $1 million retro payment.
Okay. Well,
Agent Orange.
I tell you what I want you to do.
She has spoken to Nathan Bennett, our legislative director, and they have been working on this matter.
Yes, I am now, because my father received the largest amount of retro pay, and for the VA to inform me that nobody will receive his money.
Well, they're looking at finding another alternative right now as we speak.
Is this something that's affecting others? Is this not just...
Yes, they are waiting until the veterans die, so they will not pay out the retro amount of money, and veterans need to know that. When they are dealing with this Agent Orange and looking at retro money, the VA is trying to say anybody under 18, if he doesn't have any children or a spouse, nobody receives $1 million.
Sharon, here's what I want you to do to make sure that we close the loop. If you would hold on and off the air, give Drew your name and a number where you can be reached, then either Mr. Bennett or someone on the congressman's staff will get back to you.
Nathan
and just kind of, you know, update where you are, okay?
Yeah.
All right, well, you do, pick up, Sharon and get her information off air. Drew, if you would do that. So when do you all, when do you guys go back to work?
Tuesday.
We'll
go back Tuesday.
Tuesday.
I mean, of course, this is the district work periods. They call it recess. Some people call it recess. It's still, we're still working. Mm-hmm. We're just working in our districts.
All right. And so when do the back pay, when will federal employees see that? Will that be on the next check?
They won't miss a beat. Well, our employees won't miss a beat because I made sure that everyone, was designated as essential employees. So they won't miss a beat. They won't miss any money, thankfully.
And then all these federal websites that have been down, they're up or kind of going up.
We're back to business.
You're back to business.
We're back for now. But again, you know, I think sometimes we tend to be reactionary after the fact. We have to preemptively hold our legislators accountable before we reach the debt limit again in a few months.
And somebody talked about, and you talked about getting out and vote, and other people talked about that, and I got a text message from somebody that lives out in the suburbs. They said text 85620 keyword name, I said, was, we tried to vote them out and we got Todd Rokita. So how important is it for folks that are listening that don't live in the 7th Congressional District, that live out in the suburbs, all y'all in Brownsburg and Avon, you got Todd Rokita. So y'all know what you need to do between now and next year. And you can tell Todd Rokita I said that because I still got to tape from 6 years. I need to, you're trying to say I should need to bring that tape out? I need to. See, the congressman forgot about that.
Yeah, well, you know, mobilize. And here's the thing about it. Republicans are upset about how their party is being impacted by this. And I encourage Republicans who are of goodwill, I encourage independents and libertarians to come together and mobilize to vote these folks out of office.
And finally, can Andrew Luck handle Peyton Sunday night?
It's going to be the battle royale, I'm telling you. Well,
were your colleagues talking about it? Wait a minute. Andre, you're going back to Indianapolis.
Luck is the truth now. Andrew Luck is the truth.
Yeah.
He's a young guy, 24 years old. And
Architect.
I see a lot of potential. I see some Elway in him. I see some John Elway in him. I'm excited about it. I was a big Peyton fan, but, Luck is the man. I'm co-signing Luck heavily.
So now there's no wagers between you all and the Colorado delegation.
Always.
Oh, one final thing. For only the fourth time in American history, voters of a sovereign state elected an African American to the United States Senate. Cory Booker is now Senator.
Good brother.
He's now Senator elect. How significant is that?
Very significant. I think post Reconstruction, it took us a while to kind of get back to the representation we had. I think pre-Reconstruction, we may have had, 9 or 10 senators, Amos? And then after that, we saw we saw the poll tax being implemented in different municipalities and states. And so what we're seeing now is we're seeing a new generation of folks who are willing to have their statewide representatives be African American, Latino, or otherwise. I'm hopeful. I'm happy that Tim Scott's there. I was happy that Mo Brooks was in the Senate for the short period of time, but I'm even more excited that Cory Booker's there. I had a chance to sit with him for some time. He invited me and Keith Ellison to his office a while ago to talk about some international issues, and I think he's a brilliant man, and he's we may see him in the White House in 10 or 15 years.
I got an email. I'm going to pass this on to you because I'm running out of time. He's an African-American male entrepreneur, native of Indianapolis. He thinks he's got an idea that can help reduce the fraud of our government.
Oh, wow.
So I'm going to pass that on to you because, wait a minute, if a brother can help reduce the fraud.
I love it.
He says he's got software. Maybe he can help fix healthcare.gov.
Well,
we need all the help we can get.
I'm the ranking member of Economic Development on the Transportation Committee, and we'd love to hear what he has to say.
All right, Congressman Andre Carson, he's back home. They let him. They're out.
Hallelujah.
The hostages have been set free.
Glory be to God. Yes, thank you.
All right, thanks very much.
Always
when we come
pleasure,
back, open
brother.
Up the lines the rest of the way. What else? Oh, yeah, we got to tell you about the classic. And they want me to believe that there were 8,000 people at the classic wearing credentials. Where were they sitting? Where were they hiding? All that and more. It's after these with Avis, after these.